Welcome, everybody, to episode 296 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp. Hello, John.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Salutations. I'm doing well. Had a great week. We're going into, this is WordCamp US week, so doubling down, doing laundry, doing chores, getting everything done, vacuuming out the car for the drive down.
Wiping the... All the spit off of the laptop screens and trying to polish everything up too.
Yes. As you sit next to people with everybody who had their laptops out, I noticed that's pretty good. I guess that's a pretty good tip to do, clean your monitor screens. Yeah. We have an awesome show lined up for people today and a great guest. But before we get to him, I want to let everybody know that by the time you listen to this episode, WordPress 4.9.1 will likely have shipped. In fact, I was checking out the core Slack channel, and they're in the process of going through the release cycle now. And 4.9.1 fixes a couple of bugs, including the page template issue that we discussed on last week's episode related to caching. So they removed the caching because it caused more problems than it solved. So that should take care of the page template issue. And for most sites out there, the majority of sites, it should automatically upgrade to 4.9.1. So just a heads up there. So as far as our guest is concerned, his name is the one and only Matt Mullenweg. He is the co-creator of the open source WordPress project. He is the CEO of Automattic and a native of Houston, Texas. Congratulations to the Houston Astros, by the way. What a World Series.
Yeah. And, I was actually at game five, which was an incredible one. It's the one that I think it was 13-12 was the score.
Was that the epic comeback one? Mm-hmm. Where they just kept going back and forth in extra innings. That was something else.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That was cool. And speaking of Houston, Texas, we know Hurricane Harvey came through Houston, devastated Houston with the flooding. Was your family okay? Property okay?
Yeah, everyone ended up not totally unaffected.
Uh-oh.
Was really fortunate.
Okay. Sorry, you froze up a little bit there. So you said not everything was totally unaffected, right?
Yeah, but everyone was safe and fine, which is the important thing.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Good. Awesome. So the last time you were on the show, and we always kind of joke about this, was July 2016, episode 240. So that was a long time ago. In fact, I was starting to worry about not being able to get you on the show this year, but this is kind of cool. We're just a few days before WordCamp US, the epic State of the Word, which is one of the highlights every year. I really appreciate. So glad to have you on the show. And it seems like every time I have you on, I have a different co-host. I have a different partner in crime. And this gentleman here, you may recognize him. He worked for you just as I do now. John, why don't you, I'll let you start off with our questioning. And our questioning today will range from a number of different topics. We'll cover a lot of different things and we'll take it from there. I imagine we're going to have a lot of great conversations today.
I'm bummed I missed episode 300. Or this isn't episode 300.
Almost.
We can have you back for 300, right? We could do the pre WordCamp US and then post WordCamp US.
You know, yeah. Sign me up for episode 300 as well.
All right.
Is it all right if I turn my video off? My bandwidth is a little low, so it might help with the audio.
Yeah, sure. That's fine.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. Not a problem at all. So my first question is, I hearken back to the days of when you gave me the gift of three wonderful years at Automattic, and you used to talk about how Automattic you wanted to keep it small, and you really liked the Automattic family and keeping it under 100 employees and or even under 50 back then, and then it was over 100 and keeping it under 200. And now that Automattic is, I think, 640 some odd strong and growing,
sounds about right.
What's the one, I guess, I really, it's 5 years since I've worked for you. And how are you dealing with having 600 people? And what is the, What is the upper threshold that you say we'll never get over 1,000? Or how are you dealing with it? And where do you think Automattic is going to go from here?
Well, I would be happy for Automattic to be thousands of people, 10,000, 100,000, assuming we could find, the right sort of folks, people who sort of have a shared passion in our mission, and of course, you know, the skills to be the best in the world, whatever their kind of role is. I think we have a big advantage in sort of geography agnostic hiring that opens it up. I mean, I think before when Automatic was very small, I had trouble imagining it larger because I had never seen a large, I never worked at a large company that I liked. Mm-hmm. But yep. My experience at that point had been like subcontracting for Shell, you know, like CNET, which was fine, but a little bit slow.
Right, right.
It's like as we scaled, and especially there were great leaders inside the company, I began to see how we could actually get better as we got bigger. And so at that point, the bit kind of flipped and became excited about growing it.
Well, I know when I started at Automatic, I was in the process of moving from Miami, Florida, to Providence, Rhode Island, which is where John Maeda's influence on me became apparent just from being so close to RISD. I lived like a mile away from Brown and RISD. And so bringing John into the fold at Automatic my question, I guess, is how, my two-part question is when he came into Automatic, how instantly did that influence the team and the design engineers that you have there now? And then, I know you have heroes and people that you've talked about and that you've really influenced you in your design aesthetic and the way that you approach problem solving and all those things. So who is next after John Maeda?
Sorry. I'm really sorry. This internet is coming in and out. Is it okay?
Your audio's cutting in and out as well.
Cutting right, out, so yeah, a little bit.
Give me 1 second. I apologize for this live broadcast. <That's okay. laughs> I'm already in Nashville, so it must have been something. 1 minute and I'll reconnect. I'll be right back.
Okay. It's probably at the official Renaissance Hotel down in Nashville, and everybody's already there probably sucking up the bandwidth.
Right. If we could get everyone that's listening right now to just maybe get sign off of the Wi-Fi and the internet for a minute or two. We can get Matt a nice solid connection. That would be great. I think in the meantime, though, if we go back while Matt reconnects and think about WordPress 4.9.1, one of the things that I'd like to talk to Matt a little bit about today while we've got his ear to funnel all these questions through is, how has the release process for WordPress, I know, but it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about how the release process of WordPress has evolved and changed.
I was thinking that as well. You know, he charted a new course for WordPress development last year. It was one of the highlights of the State of the Word. And typically we would have three spaced out within 4 month interviews, 4 month intervals of three major WordPress releases per year. And even though that this was sort of featured core focus driven this year, we still managed to have two major releases this year. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that.
Well, two major releases on top of running a company with 600 plus, on top of feature plugins like Gutenberg, on top of World Series, on top of a hurricane, on top of like, oh goodness, there's just a lot going on. Yeah.
So we wait for Matt to reappear, a lot of cool stuff that we're covering in today's show. Gutenberg.
Telemetry. Let's talk about this. When are you getting into town? When are you getting into Nashville, Jeff?
I am getting into Nashville Thursday, hopefully about this time. And let's see, Thursday, I've got my eye on Peg Leg Porker Barbecue, Ma's Tacos. I'm not into hot spicy stuff, so the hot chicken, I think I'm going to have to pass. But I know a lot of other people, Hattie B's, I think it's a popular hot chicken place down in Nashville. I was just checking out the Holiday Inn I'm at has free complimentary shuttle service to the convention center. So I'm like, wow, man, I'm like all set. And then we just found out that there's going to be a Christmas parade there on Saturday, so you got to get there early.
I know.
Foot traffic is going to be closed, and then there's Contributor Day. The State of the Word happens on Saturday at 4 p.m. And if you cannot make it there in person, please, by all means, go to the WordCamp US website right now and register for a free live stream ticket. That'll give you access to where you can see all the different sessions throughout the day, including the State of the Word. So there's like an unlimited amount of free stream tickets still available. I highly encourage you to get that, and at least you'll be able to participate in the event that way.
Well, while we're talking about the State of the Word, Matt's back. So well, before we jump back into questions, a word of advice for people that haven't been to a State of the Word before is to maybe consider lining up early if you want to get yourself a good seat, because we're talking about 2,000 people trying to fit into one or two rooms. So if you're trying to sit next to somebody special or trying to find a nice comfortable chair, you might want to line up a little bit early, because the past 2 years have been a little crazy. It's just been a line all the way around the building to get in and sit down for the State of the Word. So welcome back, Matt.
I always try to get there at least 3 or 4 minutes early.
Yeah. I prefer to be in the main room, not the overflow. Just experience. So welcome back. I guess we could repeat your question about influence of John Maeda.
Yeah, how has John Maeda influenced the design team so far? And then on the list of people that you would hope to bring into the Automatic family in the future, is there anybody that you admire that you'd like to see influence the direction that Automatic is going?
So, like, are we pre-announcing any hires?
I can't do that. I'm not saying that, you know. I've heard you talk so fondly about the Tonys and obviously John Maeda and stuff that I don't know. Just curious to see who you'd like to see. If there's anybody else that you can announce without announcing, I guess.
I think definitely perhaps by next time I'm on the podcast, might be able to talk about something. Ooh.
But
for right now, you know, John's had an awesome impact on the design team, and he brings a lot of experience and history and design, not just in the computational form, but going all the way back to the roots of typography and everything else. Mm-hmm. And done some really cool meetups and events with the designers. I like it because essentially his role is to challenge and grow all of the designers at Automatic, of which we have, 40, 45 now.
Yeah.
So for really all those folks, John is it's kind of like their coach, and is making sure that team is as high quality and as high impact as possible. We're hiring a lot there too. So over the next 10 months, next 6 months, we'll be adding somewhere between 10 and 15 more designers to that crew. So that's cool. Lots of new folks coming in as well.
And he's been sort of, not inspirational, but one of the people strongly behind the term inclusive design, right? Through design.blog and through the various meetups and conferences he's been at, there's been a very strong focus on inclusive design. It's by and large part, he's a lot of influence on this year, both throughout Automatic and just the design community in general.
Well, I think 100%. I think being able to work with someone with the experience like John, like I've talked about, if I was ever going to go back to school, it would be because I would want to study underneath a very specific instructor for a reason. I would want a guru. I would want a specialist to buddy up with and hang out with. So even having someone that is as influential and inspirational as John for your design team is really giving them, it's like a job perk by itself, is just being able to sit shoulder to shoulder with someone like that. So it's nice that you're staffing up for your design team to give them like cool little nuggets and stuff. So now it makes me wonder about the different teams that are within the walls of Automatic, designers, not just designers, developers, support, even, you know, as executives and stuff would come in, that I wonder who on episode 300 we're going to be talking about next. It's exciting.
I'll have to tell John you said that. That's highly, very, very complimentary. So thank you.
So one of the things that happened recently is GitLab raised $20 million in funding and added you to the board of directors. So I wanted to know, what is your role in this position, and will we see GitLab start to replace some of Track and Subversion for WordPress core development? And this story kind of hits close to home for John, because he's been a big fan, I believe, of GitLab. And you know, from what I understand, the notion of replacing some of core development with GitLab was poo-pooed. And now look who's on the board of directors for GitLab.
Wait, where did it get poo-pooed?
That was my suggestion at a contributor day a couple of years back, where I think you Automatic had just started using Fabricator internally for some things. And my suggestion was GitLab, because I was using it for my own plugins and just a private repo for myself, and had contributed some stuff upstream to GitLab, and then had a conversation with, I think, their first round of investors just about what my thoughts were on it and everything. And so when they had announced that you were joining the board, I was like, oh, well, I love GitLab. And everyone, actually, the exact words when I recommended that we consider trying GitLab out was, "GitLab sucks, we will never use it," was the exact response that I got when I suggested moving to GitLab. To which I replied, well, that's not very fair.
Never say never.
Yeah. So
now I know never to say never. No, and what's been impressive is GitLab has come a long way since then.
Absolutely.
If you look, actually, even just this year, one of the things I really like about the company and the product is how fast it moves.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the things that they've added thus far around kind of managing infrastructure and continuous integration and testing, I think could be pretty influential. So if nothing else, the ideas will be influential for what we do at WordPress. And you can definitely see something like Tide perhaps tying in there.
Yep.
But until the Gutenberg push is done, I don't really want to distract us too much with tool changes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think that's probably smart.
I can only imagine what even more chaos that would bring if we're doing tool changes amongst everything that's going on around Gutenberg. So that's pretty cool. So about this time last year, you announced something called the WordPress Growth Council. Has there been any progress on this front?
There has been, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the state of the word. So I apologize. I don't want to give away too much for Saturday. So the advantage and disadvantage of doing it right before is that there's some things I'm going to save for Saturday.
Okay. So this kind of ties into WordPress's growth. But earlier this year, I believe the first time in the company's history, Automatic unveiled 5 commercials that were tested in 6 different television markets. Now, I think Automatic may have done some radio commercials beforehand, but never really had a TV commercial. And earlier this year, I wrote about how I felt like the commercials were confusing to me. I didn't really quite understand the message that they were sending out. But do you have any results from those experiments?
Yeah. Well, we stopped the TV test. And I think the main thing that we learned was that we need to do a lot more iteration on our creative and our messaging. I think the Growth Council can be part of that. But I think also just, you know, for the stuff that Automatic's doing next year, we want to really scale up where we tested sort of just one set of commercials and tests. And I would like to be doing closer to like one creative a week. So like different concepts and everything. So really get a lot of things going in parallel so that we can, test and iterate as much as possible. Because much like with software, like we've been doing these Gutenberg releases every week, like you learn from what you put out there. Mm-hmm. And so we might have to get like a few months kind of queued up because these things take longer to ship. So we'll have to have kind of like a parallel. But we definitely want to, test like literally 20 or 50 times more than we did this year.
I don't know if anybody ever asked, but how much creative control and influence did you guys have over those commercials? Did you hire, I'm assuming you had to hire somebody, like a third party or somebody to do them, but how much influence did you have over the direction that everything went?
Oh, well, I didn't personally work on them, but from our marketing team, I mean, they obviously chose who to hire and what the messaging would be and approved everything. So there is that worked well, and I think we would just want to scale that out to more sorts of things, because the market's become very competitive, and I think the opportunity is larger than it's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like driving down the road listening to AM talk radio, because I'm an old man at 33 years old, and hearing an ad for Squarespace. I'm like, what are you doing? What's Squarespace doing on my radio? But they've made a hard push into both TV and radio. And not too long ago, I think I heard an automatic advertisement. I'm like, yeah, there we go. That's more like it.
Well, I hope you can start to hear a few more. The nice thing is that anything that we do there will benefit the entire WordPress community, because bringing more people in the WordPress kind of ecosystem that aren't going to be using Squarespace or Wix or Shopify or something like that means that every plugin business, every host, everything gets a bit better.
And now I want to talk about something that's been a bit of a hot topic. Well, actually, there's been many hot topics this year, but this word telemetry. So I listened to your recent interview on PostStatus, and it seemed like you were sort of okay with the idea of usage data collection if it abided by certain privacy criteria, which actually matches the criteria that was proposed by Morten Rand Hendrickson when he wrote the core ticket or a track ticket proposing telemetry in WordPress. And I was just... Now I'm kind of confused. I don't know. Are you for or against the idea of telemetry in WordPress? Because I'm right there with you. I mean, there were a lot of things in that interview, in the PostStatus interview, about data collection that I was not in my head up and down with, that I agree with you on that data is not an end-all, be-all, and just collecting data for the sake of collecting data is not a good thing.
No, and I think also, like, in this age of both increased privacy implications, but also just a lot of people getting hacked, data can also be a liability.
Right.
And so we want to protect. I think one reason people choose WordPress is we've always been respectful of data and privacy, and we don't want to do anything to collect or keep too much, especially for something kind of urgent, and then to have that leak somehow. So, you know, a good way to do that, a good best practice there, is actually minimizing the amount that you kind of keep over the long term.
I think of, like, it always reminds me of, like, it's like an impolite question to ask. Like, would you like to share some of your usage data with us? Like, every time that I see it, and the box is always checked by default. It's not like it's unchecked. The box is always checked. But I think, like, you know, I don't mind sharing some of, I mean, I'm not doing anything weird, so sure, I guess, but I never know what is getting shared back. Like, Apple does an okay job if you go digging through, like, the logs in your phone to figure out, like, what's potentially being sent, but it's indecipherable by humans. And so if WordPress was ever going to get to a point where we were going to start asking that potentially impolite question about sharing some data, that I would really want it to be so open and transparent about what's being sent back and forth and how to get it and how to purge it and all those things, that it becomes its own open source piece of software and project and API running on its own above and beyond what we're already doing with WordPress, the BBs, GlotPress, Gutenberg, everything else. Like, it just seems like to do this the classy way would take a lot of time and effort that it would be hard to dedicate towards it right away.
And then, is there another way to get it? So, like, let's say we want to know, like, the number of posts across all the WordPresses. Like, could we get that by crawling public sites? Yeah, we could. And if the site's not public, they probably don't want us to have the data in the first place. So, there's
and that's one of the other things I was going to ask.
Different way
without usage tracking. How do WordPress core developers, you or I, even know how people are using WordPress? How do we know that the features that we're developing and putting in WordPress, how do we know this is the right direction we should be going without this type of usage data?
Well, you can sample. I mean, like, that's the thing. And it's, you can statistically, you don't have to look at every single user of something like WordPress to know what statistically basically everyone is doing. And you actually get diminishing margin returns very, very quickly. So by sampling smaller sort of swaths of the users, I think that we can get plenty, more than enough than we ever be able to use data to make decisions for everything and have a much smaller sort of surface area for being exposed in terms of what we're collecting or anything else.
Yep. And that's like the difference between data-driven decision-making and like data-influenced decision-making, which is one of the things that I remember when a lot of the A/B testing stuff started happening on WordPress.com, and that it's nice to have data, but it doesn't always necessarily change what it is that you still want to do or that you feel is right in your heart anyways. So, it's useful, but if it's at the cost of potentially exposing or doing something, or even just having it be questionable about what was happening with the data, it almost doesn't seem worth the cost yet. I mean, I don't know. And then it's like if there's enough that we can get from the REST API just by crawling through things, or if we can get stuff from web hosts or other things, I don't know. And one of the things, I guess my point that I'm stumbling over is, I've always really appreciated the freedom to of WordPress to kind of ebb and flow with the direction that things are going. And once there ends up, and I'm not saying that this is for sure, but if there is actual real life telemetry data to indicate that something is the decision that should be made, it makes it really hard to go against that data if the direction that something should go is different based on other projections or other data. I don't know. I like the freedom of not having it.
I actually don't worry about that at all. It's not uncommon to make a decision against the data because the data just tells you what's happening. It doesn't tell you what could happen.
Right.
So maybe the reason something isn't being used very much is because the feature is not very good.
Right.
So it could tell you, it doesn't mean take it out. It might just mean you need to do a few more iterations on it. And, I kind of go back to that old Henry Ford quote where if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have told me a faster horse.
Yep, exactly.
So there's different ways to do this. I think a good example of sampling could be the ones we've been doing around Gutenberg. Mm-hmm. That, by definition, is only talking to a few people. We're counting in the tens, not even in the hundreds or thousands. Mm-hmm. But when you start to see every single person have the exact same problem, like when we move the toolbar to the top to be fixed to the top, and literally every single person that we tested it with like couldn't find it or caused errors, it's like, Well, do I need to ship that to 100,000 people and then like A/B test those 100,000 people and see like how many times they click on this or that? Like, no. In fact, the further you get away from a user, the more like misleading the data could be. I actually blogged on this the other day, so check out my most recent blog post on ma.td to plug my blog. It doesn't necessarily make you more confident, but it's kind of a weird argument to make because it seems you would assume that more data means you're better informed. And so who would ever want to make decisions that are less informed? No one, not including myself.
Right.
But.
Well, it's like removing PressThis. Like I used PressThis. I like PressThis and I like the iteration that Stefan and I forget who else worked on it the last time, but the more recent iterations of PressThis, I think like made the feature a lot better than it was before. But all of the sort of inherent problems that come with a feature like PressThis meant that with the low level of adoption or usage, like pulling it out is going to be painful for the people who are like hardcore users of it, but leaving it in is kind of painful for everyone who doesn't use it. And so there is a decision that has to be made. Like, is this worth leaving and maintaining, or is it worth sunsetting and keeping in, or is it actually time to cut some of the fat off if we can afford to? And so it like, you can't make everyone happy all the time, but PressThis was a good example of something that I think was better as a plugin, and it transitioned nicely out of core and into one. So whether or not there would have been telemetry data that indicated that, one or less than 1% of users used PressThis, it kind of would have just verified the gut feeling that we all kind of had about the feature already anyways. So
that one, I think we could have done a little bit better. And I know we're working to bring back the bookmarklet, which was removed a little hastily. Because there's security implications for JavaScript that runs on arbitrary websites, and bookmarklets in general are kind of deemed insecure now, just universally. So, but like, let's think about that user flow and figure out a way for that user flow to still happen, even if the bookmarklet's not there anymore.
Well, great. I was actually going to say great news for John, because Brandon Kraft actually left a comment on the article today on WP Tavern. It says, hooray, the bookmarklet's been restored to the plugin. So there you go. Now you got your bookmarklet.
All right. But it could be anything. It could be like, if as we switch over to a largely RESTful world, at what point do we start talking about XML RPC and whether or not XML is just too complicated to maintain anymore? Or like any one of these things could be indicative of being scrutinized for core inclusion or being pulled out into a plugin, like the importers originally were too. So I think it's nice to have the freedom to make those decisions without always having to justify it with data. My two cents.
Now, I know the WordPress for mobile teams, they've been cranking out a lot of updates this year for both Android and iOS. In fact, pretty recently, the WordPress for iOS app received a new editor. I believe it's called Aztec. It seems to be pretty nifty. So people are just messing with editors everywhere. You know, Gutenberg and Aztec for the mobile. Mobile apps. Is mobile still a core focus at Automatic? Is there still a lot of effort being placed on maintaining the WordPress mobile presence?
Yeah, I mean, we've been increasing that team quite a bit. So it's the largest collection of engineers under one kind of division lead in the company right now. Wow. And we're hiring. I think there's two more hires that were sent to me this week. I need to do final chats with. And there's so we're definitely growing how we work on mobile. I'm really proud of what that team's done, because the apps were crashing a lot. They were getting lots of low ratings. I think both are above 4 points, 4 stars right now. The usage is going up. This login, like there's some basic stuff like around login and sign up that was really, really buggy for a lot of people, and we've been just kind of cranking away. Aztec lays the foundation for doing Gutenberg on mobile, which is that's why we started it like a year ago. It's these things are happening in parallel, but they're all highly complementary to each other.
And speaking of pretty neat sort of apps, not really mobile, but Calypso. Calypso is a pretty cool desktop application that I use on my Windows desktop. I use it sometimes because it's really fast. You know, it's a lot faster than loading WP Admin, because it's REST API based, and it supports all of WordPress's native features. And so there's something that's been bothering me, and I finally have a chance to ask you in person here. But in the 2016 State of the Word, there's this slide, and Matt Mullenweg says, Calypso is now plugin aware for all plugins that have more than 1 million active installs. We're going to send you an email and we can work on this experimental program together. However, a year later, it seems like plugin developers either didn't participate in the experimental program, or there are some difficulties involved, because if I use Calypso today, there's still not Metabox support for like Yoast or WooCommerce or some of the more popular plugins out there. So what happened there? And will there be a renewed effort maybe in 2018?
I think it was right in what's going to happen and wrong in timeline. We've got plugin support for Supercache actually has full Calypso support. So you can do everything you do in WP Admin and Supercache and Calypso. That was kind of our first kind of experiment. There's also been a ton of WooCommerce coming over into Calypso. But what we found in doing both of these is that it's tougher than we thought. And plugin authors, other ones, we're basically rightly saying, like, why should we do this if you haven't done it for your own plugins yet? So we said, okay, let's do it for our own, and then let's talk again. But the offer is still totally open. So if anyone else is interested in integrating more directly into Calypso, can't say the exact number, but in the high millions of of monthly active users. It's there. Big changes this year that I think will impact that. One, plugin and theme support on WordPress.com. So if you're reaching those customers, which are pretty high value customers, Calypso support is going to be important. And two, what's going to make it actually made parts of it a little less important or easier down the road is the whole Gutenberg side of things. So right now, there's not a lot of overlap between what WP Admin does or the code that runs it and Calypso. Mm-hmm. But once writing, editing, and then customization are Gutenberg-based, and Gutenberg's in Calypso too, in addition to WP Admin, you'll have a good 70-80% of what people do every day in WP Admin on the same code base on both Calypso and WP Admin. So if you can target and write a plugin for one, it'll work for the other.
Right. And when we say same code base, are we talking about React?
Well, like we're talking about Gutenberg. Yeah, which uses React still, yes.
Okay. All right, and speaking of WordPress and themes on WordPress, back in August, Automattic officially added the ability to install third-party plugins and themes on WordPress.com's business plan. So the one question I had was, after 12 years of not providing this ability, why now? Why? What is different now that Automattic finally adds this ability to do this for customers?
Well, it kind of would come up every single year as an idea. Probably came up when J-Trip was there.
I remember several conversations with VIPs or with Barry or others just about the viability of plugins and themes and all that. So yeah, it came up all the time.
I mean, didn't it always come down to like security? It's the security implications of it, really?
I don't want to answer that question for Matt, but I can confirm it is when I was on VIP, and I don't know if this is still the case, but I imagine that it is, that we went through our own vetting process with what plugins were like VIP approved, and that meant code review and sending some upstream patches and maintaining a VIP kind of version of it to make sure that it was available for people. And it does require a lot of trust in plugin developers and theme developers to kind of be doing the right thing. And it is a lot to take on, but the answer was always like, it always could have happened on WordPress.com or VIP or otherwise. It was just, is this the direction that, like, technically it was always possible, but spiritually, is that the direction that all of WordPress.com wanted to go? And I think back then, the answer was kind of always like, well, not yet, or maybe not. But it was never technically a problem. It was just how much are we willing to put the support burden back into the company for communicating issues or incompatibilities or problems with a world worth of plugins and themes?
Yeah, I think that's a good sort of counter argument for doing it. The technical side is also pretty hard. Because if you look at what happens is that there's no kind of, when you upload a plugin or theme to your business plan, there's no perceivable delay or change in the interface or anything. Behind the scenes, it actually happens in under 30 seconds to kind of switch you to a completely different infrastructure. So it's kind of like you're driving a car and the engine switches from being gas powered to electric powered right. while you're still driving. I think it was one of those assumptions that we looked at. And we said, well, could we do it now in a way that we felt was really, really high quality for our customers? But really what drove it was, particularly with the business plan on WordPress.com, we're asking for it. And in fact, expecting that if they were paying $300 a year for a WordPress, that it should run plugins and themes. So it was really a customer-driven decision that started it. And we kind of looked at it and said, well, could we do this? Let's try. And it was actually only about, I think, 4 or 5, maybe 4 months to the beta, and then 5 months till we launched it, and then we announced it a few months after that.
Well, and WordPress.com is such a unique code base anyways, with the bevy of stats and plugins and VIP stacked on top of it, that it was never like a, we can't do custom database tables, or we can't do any of these custom roles, or there was never really a technical limitation. It's just are we willing to staff up all of the people that it'll take to support that decision? And so I imagine now with it being, I don't know the underpinnings of it, but Daniel Bachhuber and I on VIP kind of worked on the original first blush of VIP Go, which is, I doubt is the roots of where the business plans and stuff are, but I think it makes sense for businesses to have that functionality because that's what they're going to want. They're really going to want to experiment and trick stuff out. Plus you're probably having your site built by an agency or by other people. And so it requires a little bit more of a different kind of concierge white glove sort of service than just installing plugins anywhere willy-nilly on a WordPress.com site or anything else. So it's smart.
And, well, it's definitely been a learning experience. And the response from customers has been really incredible. So we see business sites driving a ton of usage of premium plugins, including Yoast. So it's been really great. I think the opportunity that will grow in the coming years.
Last year, Automatic purchased a majority stake in a company named Pressable, which actually started off as ZippyKit, started by Vid Luther. Mm-hmm. And it's a managed WordPress hosting provider. So, you know, I think some of us out there kind of scratched our heads. But so I wanted to ask you, why did Automatic make that purchase? And what is the hosting company's purpose? And does its infrastructure have anything to do with what the infrastructure you mentioned on the business plan for WordPress.com?
Yeah, how the business plan works was highly influenced by what we learned from VIP and in redoing Pressable. So Pressable is really kind of like a labs for us in a lot of ways. But it's right now, I believe, the fastest WordPress host we've benchmarked other than VIP. So an infrastructure there that was really highly scalable. And you cut out there. What was that?
No, sorry, I was just making a joke. Now we just got to add Pressable to the WordPress.org recommended hosting page, and then we'll be all set.
I don't know if it has kind of the size of the company is not big enough to support that sort of flow. But it is really great for sort of high-end sites that need the best performance or that might have just want things to be the fastest. So think of that as a labs, and what we have been doing and want to continue to do is kind of publish what we learned from Pressable as best practices so that every single WordPress host out there can take what we learn and apply it to themselves, because the WordPress hosting community is really large. It's one that we've worked really closely with and continue to for over a decade now. So we're want to share, and we're just able to iterate really quickly and experiment really quickly by having one.
Wow, I tell you what, you know, those people in the Renaissance Hotel there need to lay off the bandwidth here, at least for another, 20 minutes or so, please.
They're all tuned in. There's just traffic going in every direction all over the places.
I'm actually at an Airbnb, and it's been totally fine, like, until just now.
No, that's how it always goes. I don't understand.
So when I saw the original announcements and things happening with Pressable, which I thought was an interesting move considering how much sort of attention that WordPress.com kind of already at least took when I was there. I know that it's sort of a full-on push into Calypso and Gutenberg and everything else. But part of me had the thought that the WordPress.org hosting infrastructure, as much as is close to my heart, and I have an affinity and love for how WordPress.org works and the API and how all of the sites and networks are hosted on it. It is, it's been a long time there supporting everything that it would be interesting to see what a modern version of all of the WordPress.org infrastructure looks like, containerized and testable and accessible and in a way that something like Pressable could potentially be used to power. Now, I don't know if there's anything at all remotely even close to something like that happening. But as much as every once in a while, like I think the Buddy Press and BB Press development sites are still on P2s on WordPress.com, and we keep talking about like moving them over to a subsite on the Buddy Press network or something. But then it's like, well, we don't really use it all that frequently. I mean, we use the forums a lot more, Slack and everything else, but a modern stack for WordPress.org and all of that would be, Pressable would be an interesting case study to try and give something like that a shot. No pressure, but you know, that was my back of the napkin math was like, oh, well, having a containerized separated partition environment to start moving some of the .org sites off into might actually be kind of nice.
I think we'll keep .org bare metal, but I can and actually announce here, tell you all that we will be migrating WordPress.org to new infrastructure next year.
Ooh, that's exciting.
It's not going to be on any web host still. It'll be more dedicated providers, but we, it's about time. Like you said, everything there is now, some of it's 4, 5, 6 years old. So good opportunity to refresh everything, get the latest and greatest.
For sure.
That's right. So earlier this year at WordCamp Europe, you had a great conversation with, I believe, Om Malik, and you guys talked about the open web, and there have been many discussions this year about the open web. And in your eyes, what is the open web and what roles do you think WordPress can play to make sure it stays open? Because around every corner, everywhere we look, there are people, organizations, governments trying to take the web and close it. And it's a never-ending battle.
Yeah. WordPress is really one of the last stalwarts of protecting the open web and fighting for the open web. So I think our mission is more important than ever.
And that's one of the things that people have to talk about the future of WordPress. And my concern is generally the future of the open web in general. Like the number of times that the SOPA or the net neutrality thing comes up year over year or multiple times a year, the one thing that I keep being reminded of is that lots of money and lots of time are being spent trying to close it up. And I feel like those of us who care a lot about keeping it open are not being as open or as vocal or as pushy, I guess, as those that are trying to close it. And I'm curious if they're without, you know, again, if it's WordPress or if it's a company like Automattic that has the financial power and backing to do it, it would be nice to see a blitz to try and keep it open for every bum rush attack that comes from the end around that keeps trying to close it on us. So I think of GitLab as a good example, or GitHub even as a company really tries to cater towards the open source side of things. So like, I would really like to see the open source powerhouse companies that band together to really have an all-star game of people that can communicate clearly why the web needs to stay open versus getting closed up.
Well, the good news, even though there's some very powerful interest in big companies on the other side, history and the people are on our side, which is the open side. So even though it might seem at points kind of dire, I am eminently confident that over the long term, open will win over closed.
I hope that you are right.
In addition to a WordPress Growth Council, we can have like an open web council, like, you know, Automattic, GitHub, GitLab, all the cool companies, all the cool open source companies can be part of that and help keep the web open. So I'd be remiss if I didn't, I mean, we've mentioned Gutenberg. We have a chance to, I mean, it's the hot button issue all year. It's been that way ever since the project was announced at last year's State of the Word. But one thing I wanted that I thought was interesting, and it was brought up to me in a sort of closed conversation. Gutenberg development is happening at a rapid pace, and is experiencing a lot of friction along the way, as you've seen in comments of the various posts we've written about it on the Tavern and within comments on GitHub. Can you touch on the mental and psychological and perhaps even physical effects that are being experienced by the people close to the Gutenberg project?
I mean, it's funny that people say it's happening so rapid when actually this is taking, you know, three times longer than most WordPress releases, you know?
That's true.
So it's not that it's happening so quickly. It's that we're tackling a really big, important thing. And so whenever you work on something that really matters and is really important, like it's gonna get more interest. It's going to get more pushback. It's going to get more everything. So it's not something you didn't anticipate. But what I said on the Post-Ask podcast the other day, just if people can keep an open mind, keep testing. Remember that we're in very much a beta phase. It's not meant to be ultra polished or anything like that. But we're really proving out some of the concepts, even like as recently as yesterday had some really major updates to it that we'll talk about this weekend. But Gutenberg is very much this editing phase of Gutenberg that we're in is really the biggest update to WordPress in a decade in many ways. And then next year when we do the customization half of it, this is the foundation that the next decade of WordPress will be built on. And so we want to get it great for that first release, but it's also something that we're going to keep building on for 5-10 years to come before we do something like Gutenberg again. So
it's weird. It just seems like there are so many people freaking out that WordPress 5.0 is around the corner, and it seems like a lot of people are stopping the projects that it could be built on 4.9 today, or thinking that, well, once 5.0 comes out and Gutenberg is released, that everything they've built is going to come crumbling to the ground. There seems to be so much fear, uncertainty, and doubt related to Gutenberg. It's crazy.
Well, honestly, anytime we've changed our write screen, our media, or all this stuff, it generates. Gutenberg definitely feels loud because it's recent and happening right now, but I wouldn't put it that much bigger or different than some previous controversial things that happened in WordPress, even in the past few years. Even like the REST API coming in. I mean, some of these things had like really, really like heated arguments around them.
But I think we also have more behind us now. So every bigger decision that's going to come, even going forward, is going to feel bigger and bigger, even if it's not. Like some of the things that happened in the past were big deals. The multi-site merge, the whole WP admin redesign. These things all, or even MP6 was one where I was not super convinced, but eventually became a believer. there have just been a lot of things that have gone that, they were big deals, but they came and went, and it ended up totally fine. But I think going forward, exactly. So I like but I'm curious. I'm excited, but also curious to see how Gutenberg does actually get stitched in. Like if it's a post only feature, or if it does actually take over the entire posting UI for pages and custom post types, or if it's a post type supports Gutenberg, or how it ends up, once it's plunked in there, what does the polish look like in terms of integrating it into all of the other bits and pieces? And those are the things that, those are the questions that I think are going to be harder to answer at the time once it lands in. A lot like the menus that went in that came originally from Woo. They had it came in because it was a really good menu setup until it had to get bolted into post types and taxonomies and fit the schema. And then it was like, well, let's rebuild it entirely. And so, once it starts off really good, but I'm it'll be really fascinating to see how all hands on deck for Theseus's ship that we are when it has to get merged in. And how hard that's going to be, or how big of a deal it's going to be.
Yeah, and we've also, the Gutenberg team created a classic editor plugin that will allow people to load the editor as it currently is. So we're officially supporting people that in the transition period, when all the plugins and things are updated, want to stay on the old one. But we've seen even, there's things that Gutenberg does today in its unpolished state that are testing so much better. Like people are being so much more successful with them than they were the classic editor. And it's, you know, some things that we just take for granted a little bit, like some of those things where you don't realize how bad it is because we're all really used to it. Again, everything works in WordPress because it's been this way for the better part of a decade. So, but if you're coming into it fresh, you know, if you put on that sort of beginner's hat, there's a lot that we take for granted that's really not intuitive and really, really challenging.
I agree.
No, and to speak on coming into it fresh, I think it was just the most recent release, 4.9. It got up to beta 4. There was a call out to try out Gutenberg. And you actually made the executive decision to sort of pull that back, that really wasn't the right time. And John and I had a pretty good conversation about the importance of first impressions, especially of something like Gutenberg to new users. And I'd like to take the opportunity to ask you, how important do you think it is for a new user, their first time of checking out and using Gutenberg, how important that first impression is?
Oh, I think it's really important. And you know, that's why we're kind of staging people trying it. And we've also done things better in the plugin, like putting placeholders. So for example, because earlier versions of Gutenberg had no kind of meta box support, people assumed that Gutenberg was not going to support meta boxes.
Oh boy, yeah, I tell you.
There were even some articles on Tavern that might have led people to that. So,
oh, nice one. I like it.
Fake news.
Yeah, we gotta keep in mind the influence and the responsibility of the WordPress press in this as well. What we're trying to do now is also be cognizant of that someone might try out Gutenberg and not read the roadmap, not really get into the development as much, and might make assumptions about it. Those assumptions might scare them because they're like, oh wait, is 5.0 coming out like before WordCamp US? Like, no one's saying that now because it's Saturday, but like a few months ago, people thought it would. and so just clearing that up, I think, will help. And as with all of this, like the closer we get, the more polished everything will be, the more documentation, the more public things, everything. And you can see this starting to roll out with like the meetup demos, different WordCamps are doing Gutenberg stuff. I'm sure every WordCamp next year will have at least one or two Gutenberg talks. Like we're really and make sure it has a good rollout and a good reception.
I think that's one of the things that the folks that work on GitLab have actually done a really good job with release over release, is as they've integrated stuff from their enterprise edition and brought it back into their open source self-hostable version. And as they've introduced CI or even webhooks or multiple email addresses and deploy keys, like as they've brought in these like little individual features into GitLab, they do a good job of like, when you update to a new version of GitLab, here's all the new cool stuff that you have to look forward to. So I think that there is like a really right and kind of a right and wrong way to do those types of callouts. And I think that it makes sense for WordPress to eventually consider having something like that. I just wouldn't want it to be too Gutenberg specific. If we're going to do this, it could be a dashboard meta box, a welcome box, a thing that we can pull from the API side of things to talk about what the new shiny is going to be in a new major release or something, or what's been removed and where to find press this, if this is a feature that you really look for. Like, I think that there are users that want that, and we can do that a little bit more intelligently than just plunking the Gutenberg one in there. But I think it goes back to, I really love the freedom to try putting that call out in there and then seeing what the feedback is. And then if the feedback is largely negative, pull it back out. Like there's something that's like really, it makes it really casual and easy, even though it's like serious business and we're all professionals and all those things. It's actually really convenient to like have the freedom to try that, fail, and revert it. And that's, that type of freedom is largely what I continue to love day over day about WordPress and the community and everything else. So,
and that's something that people forget, is you actually learn a lot more from failures than you do. but we're very scared of failure. I don't know why, actually. you know, a lot of, well, I guess I do know. A lot of people make their living from WordPress. You know, a lot of people's businesses are built around it. And so there can be kind of a conservatism that develops around kind of what's going to happen with WordPress. Like, you know, let's not kill the golden goose. Let's not, you know, change anything that might possibly go wrong.
Right.
But the counterintuitive thing is not changing is the only thing that I can guarantee will cause WordPress to die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If we make changes, you know, they could be good or bad, and we'll make more changes to make it better. But if we just sort of remain static, I can 100% guarantee that WordPress will decline in usage. So,
well, how many times year over year was there the is BuddyPress still being developed? Is BBPress still being maintained? All of the questions. If somebody did one click more to look at track and see a whole commit log of people working on something, but if the software that ends up shipping doesn't have something that is a value add or user-facing feature, then the general consensus is that something just isn't being as actively tended to as it should be. And again, that's like the GitLab folks, gosh, they execute and release like clockwork, and it's always something new and refreshing. And
yeah, the 22nd of every month, right?
Yeah, right, all the time. And it's always something cool, like the changes that come in and the... it's reliable and it's always rewarding. And that was like the original BuddyPress days when, you know, Peatling was just cranking stuff out like month over month over month over month. It was like, wow, what's happening next? What's happening next? What's happening next? And I think Gutenberg is giving that to a lot of developers or inside baseball type people that are really curious about testing what the future of WordPress is going to be. But you're exactly right that if WordPress doesn't continue to push some of these envelopes and the right envelopes, like the post format envelope wasn't necessarily the right envelope to push at the time. But, you know, going the right direction with these things is what continues to keep WordPress feeling fresh and you know, 29, 30, 30% of the web.
Yeah, 29, hopefully 30 before not too long. I think we'll hit 30 before 5.0 comes out.
That's awesome.
Well, according to some estimates, WordPress 5.0 could come out in like 2 weeks. But those people are wrong.
I heard 2 days.
Yeah, that's right. So one more question here, and then we'll wrap it up. Let's see. Earlier this year, WordPress was officially added to HackerOne. I just wanted to know, how beneficial has that been for the WordPress project, and can you explain Automattic's role in this?
Sure. I think bug bounties are awesome, you know, as a way to sort of bring people in and to reward folks who are doing research around critical vulnerabilities. And I would love to expand our HackerOne to cover top plugins you know, at some point over the next year. Automattic, I think, used HackerOne first. And other than that, has just been a contributor alongside other people on the WordPress security team. I think we have, you know, 50-ish folks who have access to it and are helping out there. So it's a good set of folks from many, many companies. As you know, led by Aaron Campbell, as the current security czar. And I do think, though, we need to do a better job. We still have lots of open issues and haven't fully triaged everything. Of course, urgent stuff gets handled, but we still could be a little bit better just in kind of the gardening and triage of all, everything that comes through there.
I also believe that Automattic is providing the financial support, paying out the bounties as well on WordPress's behalf.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah. That's fine. It's not too much money. And, you know, anything to divide that up would honestly be more complicated and more trouble than it's worth. But of course, we could change that in the future if it were needed. But yeah, Automattic sponsoring all that right now.
That's one of the things that, like, depending on which side of the community and the coin that you'd want to land on, it is either a super generous gift or it is controversial. Like, I prefer to look at it as like it is
I think it's a cool contribution, to be honest.
If it were the other way, where no one was paying bounties, would be like a way worse world than like having to not have to worry about those things. Because I tried doing that for a while with my own plugins. I've got 40-some plugins and set up a HackerOne account myself before. Once I knew Automatic was using it and we had started moving towards it, I just wanted to move towards it myself to get a little bit of a head start with my own plugins. And, but it was instantly burdensome for one person and my one employee that I had at the time, because if you want to pay out, someone finds something, you want to make sure that they feel valued. And so $50 doesn't always do that. Some, you know, it's got a $250. Somebody spent a day working on a bug that they found in my plugin. And so if you do that 100 times, you just spent a lot of money. So,
maybe you just should write more secure code, J-Tri.
Hey.
I'm just kidding.
But in the end of the day, I think that it's a better setup to know that that Automatic is paying those bounties than not, because otherwise we'd scramble.
Yeah, and be clear, the bounty is determined by the WordPress security team. It's just basically Automatic's credit card on file. And there's also lots of other companies I'm sure would be happy to do that. It's not just an Automatic thing. And like I said, it's not too much money right now.
I remember when I think somebody suggested, is this for all plugins? And I remember Matt saying, oh, no, we'd go broke. That was a good one.
Well, even though Automatic's credit card number is on file, like, I mean, in the interest of being as transparent as I can be, when we're going through and assigning bounties for BuddyPress or BBPress issues, I still feel a little weird about trying to, you know, assign a bounty for money that isn't mine to spend. Like, even if somebody's signing off, yeah, like, it's fine, it's okay, don't worry about it. There's a part of me that still worries about it a little bit. Like, okay, we'll come up with the bounties. We have a little bit of a rubric for how much certain bounties should pay. But at the end of the day, we'll come up with it and recommend the dollar amount. But sometimes I still feel a little guilty about spending Automatic's money for some of that stuff. But it does work out really well. HackerOne, the one thing that HackerOne, in my experience, that in using it for my plugins, but also for WordPress Core and the BBs, that I thought was interesting compared to using the security at WordPress.org inbox is the kind of the amount of back and forth that the security team really is expected to go through. Not that we weren't before, but now that there is sort of a log of everyone being able to see every issue and the communication that happens between them, that really is, I think, the part that is the hardest for a volunteer security team to keep up with, is just checking in on issues, making sure that people feel listened to, responded to within 24, 48 hours, whatever. Like, just the communication side of it, it does raise the bar for what the security team should be doing compared to just an inbox. And it's not always easy to do a good job or to feel like you're doing a good job, because there's just so much happening and going on. So that's the one thing I think we could probably still always do better at, is just staying on top of the communication side of it.
So with that, we covered a lot of ground here on today's episode. I know Matt's already down there in Nashville. Have you had a chance to eat hot chicken yet?
I did have a little bit of hot chicken, but I haven't been to like the classic places yet. Had some really good barbecue. Seen some great music. The one thing I don't like is that people smoke in bars here, like inside.
Oh,
which I'm not used to.
No,
But Nashville's been really great, and I guess this internet connection isn't too great either. So I apologize for coming in and out. Episode 300, I'm on a super solid one. So thank you all for being patient with my flaky connection.
It's okay. It's kind of turned into a tradition here when we interview you on WordPress Weekly. There's always an audio issue. I don't understand. great to have you on the show again. If people want to keep in touch with you or or follow you. I mean, you're not hard to find, but you know, where can people kind of monitor your internet activities?
Sure. My blog is ma.tt. I'm at on Twitter and Instagram, and I'll be at WordCamp this weekend and looking forward to meeting everyone.
Yeah, WordCamp US, first year, one of two in Nashville, Tennessee. And you will be delivering the State of the Word this Saturday at 4 p.m. And I encourage everybody, if you can't be there in person, to pick up a free live stream ticket. I remember watching the live stream one year, and it was fantastic. You could switch between the rooms and view the different sessions, and the video quality was excellent. So it's a great way to sort of watch everything that's happening from home. And I remember last year, you see this guy? Look at this. I still got him. The Wapoo, man. What an awesome piece of swag right there. so John and I will be on our way to WordCamp US, I believe, tomorrow.
I'm driving out tomorrow.
Yeah. You're driving out tonight. So I'll meet you there. And it's just going to be one hell of a family reunion for a lot of us. So it's going to be a good time. So everybody, thanks a lot for listening to our show. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, J-E-F-F-R-0, and John?
On Twitter and GitHub at JJJ and JJJ.blog.
Excellent. So there won't be a show next week. My wife and I are going to take some time off after WordCamp US.
That means I get a week off.
All right. Instead of Nashville, we'll be on the east side of Tennessee, so we'll check that out. But then when we come back, we're going to have a full-blown review, and I'm sure Matt's going to give us a lot to talk about. With his State of the Word. So we'll review that. And then on December 20th, we're going to have Heather Burns on the show to talk about all things privacy and the GDRP. There's a lot of things going on in the world right now revolving privacy and things going on online. So that's what you can look forward to on WordPress Weekly. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again soon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John.